Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to BT Sport's new podcast, Life's a Pitch. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Dom Fifield, The Guardian's London football correspondent, and Martin Lipton, Deputy Head of Sport at The Sun. It's International Week, time for us all to get our breath back. It's been wonderfully, joyfully bonkers. Who wins the title, Leicester or Spurs? Which big name, apart from Chelsea, is going to miss out on the top four? Have Sunderland and Newcastle conspired in their own downfall? Any other surprises in store? We'll go through the card in the next half hour or so. First, Leicester fans are so happy they refuse to leave Selhurst Park. Now, you were there, Dom. Will their team be moved?
I don't think they will, actually. I think that performance was a very typical Leicester City performance. Everything worked. Their system, very comfortable with the system. They know exactly what they do. They can almost read each other's minds with some of the passing and movement. And they've got such a stingy defence now that they can nick games 1-0. They did nick that match. And it was the last seconds of the game when Damien Delaney hooks that volley onto the top of the crossbar. OK, it wasn't the underside of the crossbar. It wasn't the clearest of chances. But just seeing the woodwork struck, so another 1-0 win, 4 out of 5 now played out, it just looked to me and felt to me like, yeah, this is their title now.
And, you know, 1-0 wins are always great tests of nerve, aren't they? And they've got the ultimate test of nerve now, haven't they, Martin? You know, basically, 17 points out of 7 games, they're there.
Look, it's theirs to lose, and who would have imagined we'd be saying that at the end of March? But that's the reality. They have been, without question, the best team in the league this season. They've won 19 games. They've won more than anybody else. They've lost fewer than anybody else. They deserve to be 5 points clear of the pack. And they've also come through a really testing period because I thought their hardest games would be the matches when they had to make the game rather than just play the reactive football they did at the start of the season. They had the majority of possession for the first half on Saturday, which they don't normally do. They've developed this ability to win games, to score the odd goal, the goal that's important, to get the break, but then to hold on to it. And that's an invaluable quality, and there's no question about it. They have learnt to play the situation as much as anything else. They've not allowed the nerves to conquer them. And at the moment, I can't see them being toppled. I think they will go on to win the league. I mean, Fergie said at this luncheon a couple of weeks ago, he thought they'd win by 8 or 9 points.
3 games to go,
didn't he? I don't think he's too far wrong, actually. I think they're going to win the league.
Mm. And Ranieri, you know, we do forget, you know, despite all the bumbling and everything else, he is a practiced, seasoned Italian coach.
Yeah, and you can see that in the back line, can't you? The way they defend and the way that they bring their midfielders back in to help as well. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? That's an Italian defence, but it is actually there. The qualities are there. He's never won a league championship before, has he, in any of the clubs that he's managed, but this will be his time. Look, that in itself is a fantastic story. It's particularly in a time when Chelsea is looking for a new manager, for him to be back in the Premier League and excelling in the way he is. And look, the whole country bar Tottenham Hotspur and maybe some optimistic Arsenal fans want Leicester City to do it.
That's deluded, by the way, not optimistic.
Yeah, that's probably true. But look, it's a wonderful story. It will be one of the greatest football stories.
Let's concentrate on the centre of that defence, because basically with Leicester, you know, you can see the obvious, which is Vardy, it's Mahrez, it's Kante, it's now Drinkwater. But those two central defenders, Huth and Wes Morgan, they are right at the heart of this, aren't they?
But it's the whole unit as well, because it's Fuchs at left back and it's Simpson at right back, and the goalkeeper who makes big saves when he has to. The deflected save from, I think it's Balassi on Saturday. Yeah. He makes these saves. But yes, the two centre-halves are so powerful and strong, and they're both extremely limited. I mean, Robert Huth wasn't exactly a big loss when he left when he left Chelsea, and he's been round the houses enough times since, and nobody's really been that fussed about him. He's been like a jobbing centre-half. And yet it's worked brilliantly this season. He's chipped in with big goals in big games. The winner at Spurs could end up being the most crucial goal in the entire season. Morgan has been indomitable. He's been a remarkable player. He's played every game. You know, he was at Forest a couple of years ago and people didn't take him seriously.
Well, he's played without a break for 2 years because of his commitments with Jamaica.
And it's brilliant. And I, you know, I don't see how anyone can possibly begrudge what they're achieving as a unit, as a team, as a club. And they said the central defence has been terrific, the solidity there. This is a team that, that shipped five against Arsenal at the start of the season. And you thought, oh, well, that's it. OK. The fairy tale, the bubbles burst, that's it. They'll end up finding their level about 12th, 13th, 14th. That was the blip. That was their one game blip as a unit was against Arsenal. They don't concede goals. They look solid. They think that if they score one, and with Vardy and Mahrez, they're likely to score one, they'll win the game. It's a massive advantage.
And also, it's about team spirit. And I think you could probably make the same point about Tottenham, is that there is a... isn't it, the internal dynamics are right, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I did Spurs on Sunday as well, and that on paper looked a really daunting and awkward fixture against a team that hadn't lost... Bournemouth hadn't lost an away game.
But this game was over in 44 seconds.
It had gone. Yeah, absolutely. In the first 16 minutes, it's the energy that Tottenham have. And again, like Leicester, you're right. They just have this... They know what each other are going to do. They can read each other's movements. They're comfortable in the system they play. And they've got proper quality in their team as well, in a similar way to Leicester. I think it's probably... You look at the Spurs team, you can see that developing in maybe for a longer term than the current Leicester City team. So maybe they can sustain the challenge over the next few seasons as well. But there's so much going for them. I mean, the spine of that side, the energy in that team, the dynamism of the Tottenham team is admirable. And to see that, then do that to Bournemouth, who pride themselves on those same qualities, was quite something.
It was reminiscent to me of Arsenal at their pomp when they had Henri and Pires and Lundberg and Bergkamp, and they would win games in the first 20 minutes. And then that was it. It was done. They were two or three up and there was no way back. And that was the performance Spurs put in yesterday. Absolutely at it from the start with
guys,
that certainty.
Those guys had the pedigree, though, didn't they? I mean, Pires had come from France. He was a France international, Lundberg as well. The core of that team was an established pedigree.
Absolutely.
And this is a Spurs team that, you know, if they stay together in 2 or 3 years' time and they're still playing in this fashion,
it's such a young team. It's people, you know, average age 24, that is remarkable. And also, you know that there's others he wants to promote from the youth team, like Anomar. Pritchard is on loan at West Brom at the moment, but he'll come back into it next season. I'm not sure about Cavill, but he's there, and they've got the boy Winks, who, you know, he should have number 40 on his back, shouldn't he? I mean, it's wrong that he's got the other number. And a few others as well. That they, you know, the two fullbacks. Walker Peters.
Yeah, he was on the bench.
And then the other one. Yeah. You know, they've got two double barrel fullbacks, haven't they? Young kids who they fancy.
But you see, they've made a strategic commitment to youth, unlike other teams we can mention just down the road, Dom at Chelsea, and John McDermott there, because he runs the academy, but he's got a much broader role, hasn't he? It's about the strategy is right, the recruitment's right. Tottenham are in danger of being a well-round football club.
Yeah, I know, it's hard to believe, isn't it? But let's be fair, a lot of Spurs fans still moan about Daniel Levy, and I've never got it, because this is a club that when Daniel Levy took over, if Spurs finished 10th, it was a good season. Now if they finish 5th, it's a bad season. That's the growth in the club. And actually, when you've got the 6th highest wage bill to consistently outperform, as they have over the last 6 or 7 years, this will be the 6th year in 7 they finished above Liverpool. They've never done that before. They are likely to, this season, whatever happens, to finish above Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea and Liverpool, all of whom have vastly bigger budgets, and maybe Arsenal as well. If Spurs don't win the league, no one at Tottenham will be complaining.
No.
If they come second to Leicester, it will be, this is our best ever Premier League season. They've never finished in the top three in the Premier League. This is an outstanding season, whatever happens. And it will only increase the belief, because it's a club that's actually run properly, from top to bottom, with a long-term plan. And I never thought I'd say that about Tottenham Hotspur.
And what about Chelsea? You know, because, you know, you're very close to that club, Don, because you're there most of your waking life. You know, we're in another week where the Premier League are making advances about trying to get under 21 teams in the Johnson's Paint Trophy, the B team principle.
I thought the Premier League were opposed to that. Now suddenly they're in favour. Well, they make their minds up.
It's consistent with basically trying to buy what they want. But if you look at Chelsea, do you think the penny might drop, or the £100 million might drop, that they need to actually make the most of the resources they've got there?
Well, you'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
But no.
I'm not entirely convinced. I mean, look, there's a lot wrong at Chelsea in terms of recruitment. They've for a while now they've been able to fall back on the fact that the youth team has done wonderfully well in the FA Youth Cup and in the various leagues, the UEFA League as well, and they pointed to that as evidence of a burgeoning youth system.
But you look at it; they beat Manchester United 5-1 in that game. He's had his chance. Those Chelsea players are never going to kick a ball.
Was the ultimate opportunity for Chelsea to blood their younger players. They had nothing to play for in the Premier League. They weren't going to go down. It doesn't really matter whether they finished top 10. They didn't really want to qualify for the Europa League, really, anyway. So why are we not seeing the likes of Dom Solanke, although he has been injured, in fairness, over at Vitesse, playing Tammy Abraham, playing, given opportunities to play in the first team at Chelsea, and instead, bizarrely, and as, you know, possibly a favour for an agent, that they've got people like Alexandre Pato on their books, arriving at the end of January and over 55 days now, 56 days later, still not fit enough to take to the pitch and actually feature in a Chelsea shirt. Radamel Falcao still on the books. It makes no sense to me, but there have always been bizarre decisions made in the recruitment department at Chelsea, and at some point you'd like to think they'd look. Maybe that point comes when Antonio Conte walks into training at Cobham this summer and finds 60 first team players there because they've all come back from their various loans, and he has to sift through them to work out what his first team squad is, possibly. But more likely, 25 of those will be earmarked to go out on loan already for next season.
And Chelsea being Chelsea, they'll play a big part in the mayhem that's going to come in the transfer market anyway, aren't
they? Well, they will. They're going to spend big. I'm told that they intend to do a significant summer of recruitment come what may. That was always the plan, and they will go and try and get players. But they've not in the past been trying to get players to play for clubs not in Europe.
Absolutely.
I think that's the difference. It does change it. Where there are, you know, unusual, unexpected clubs in the Champions League, big clubs in the Europa League. It's a different ball game now. And even with Conte as manager, and you've got to imagine he'll bring in two or three of his own people from Italy, people he knows. I mean, I'm sure he'd like to get Bonucci or Barzagli or someone like that. You know, maybe even Lischsteiner from Juventus, who's an attacking wing-back, basically, the way they played, with a back three. That was the way he liked to play. Better than anything they've got there at the moment. Where do you find the room for young players in that? And the other thing, it's much easier for Pochettino at Spurs, as he did at Southampton, to play young kids. Because if he loses, he won't get sacked. If you're the Chelsea manager and you play kids and you lose, you are sacked. That's what happens. That's the nature of the club. Maybe it will change now. Maybe in the light of what's happened this season, the board led by the owner, agreed by Marina Granitskaya and others, will say, yes, we are willing to have another fallow period to develop these players so that in 2 years' time, we're stronger and better. But I wouldn't put a penny of yours on it.
Mm. You look at Louis van Gaal. How much credit does he deserve for the emergence of Rashford? Or is it just desperation masquerading as innovation?
I think there's an element of desperation there. Look, it feels a bit perverse to criticise Van Gaal when he has brought a lot of young players. Borthwick Jackson's made a great impression when he's been in the team as well, and there have been others on the fringes who have been given, even Varela, who played last week at right back. So we can't on the one hand say, you know, it's ridiculous that Hiddink doesn't play them when Van Gaal is playing them. I mean, he has drawn criticism because his team hasn't been playing particularly well, but I would criticise him for the few games that Rashford was played out of position.
He ended up playing at right wing back.
Right wing back in one against Liverpool, wasn't it? And the reality is that when you see what, on Sunday in the derby, there was energy there. There was energy from Lingard in midfield, who's a player who he has given opportunities to. He's driving forward through the number 10. He's finally, you know, seen the light and not picked Fellaini. And Lingard is offering them pace of movement. He's supplying a fluid front line of Martial and Rashford, and that that is enough to give people optimism. I mean, it's a wonderful story, Rashford's story. He was the only Mancunian on the pitch, I think, in the derby. And the goal was quality, absolute quality. The instinctive nature of the collection, the possession and the getting away from Di Michaelis and the finish beyond the England goalkeeper, all in the blink of an eye. It was the finish of a player of proper pedigree.
There's some really good young players there. I mean, Rashford, while Martial is increasingly reminiscent, as I thought first time actually, of a young Henri. There's something about him. He's a really top player in the making. I know they paid a staggering amount of money for him, overpaid for him, but he's still of top quality, so that's fine. I mean, Manchester United can afford to pay that sort of thing. Mm. But what you don't appear to have is a team that believes in what the manager's asking them to do. Mm. And they may play the odd one-off game, but they don't trust in what the...
So given that, and I think it's a reality, do you keep Van Gaal or do you look to succeed?
Well, I wouldn't keep him, I'd get rid. But I suspect that if he does finish top four, he'll stay. I really think that's what they want to do, and then it would allow them not...
But that's just about corporate ego, isn't it?
Well, it might be, but this is how big clubs are run often these days. It's the whim of one or two people who decide what the direction of a club is. And also, admitting you've made a fundamental mistake doesn't come easy to someone who's on £4 million a year.
Mm. What about Ronald Koeman to take over?
Well, it's a nice idea. I think everybody's been really impressed with what Koeman has achieved at Southampton. And he is an ambitious man, and you do wonder quite what the transfer policy again will be at Southampton in the summer. Will he put up with another summer where they sell a Sadio Mane, one of his big...
But that's the nature of their club and their strategy, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's what he initially bought into and accepted. But I got the impression, certainly when things were... when it appeared to hit a wall around Christmas time in January, that it was getting on top of him, and he was intimating that he wouldn't put up with that again. Now... the recovery
is one and being in two, you can get away with it, can't you? It's when you lose all.
And strangely enough, Mane, I know he did well this weekend, but Mane's actually been off colour for a while, and this calendar year really, he's not really been on it properly. But they will wheel and deal, and they will strengthen, and they're a club that has the potential to go even further.
I'd like to see Ward-Prowse playing more. I think he could be a very, very good player. I think he's an England player of the future as well. I like him. He's got great dead ball ability. He looks as though he can play.
A bit Beckham-esque at times, isn't
he? Yeah, but I mean, look, he's still a young boy. That's a great thing. I mean, genuinely, I mean, I've been a critic of the Premier League and the academy system about the lack of quality coming through. I have to say, they promised me that talent would start to emerge, and it's hard to deny that it's starting to emerge now.
Mm-hmm. But it's
and
a
that's
question,
really important.
It's the question of opportunity, isn't
it? Yes, it is. And that's incumbent upon managers to have the bravery to play players. And to look at what Pochettino has done, to look at what Southampton have done. You know, they play Target at left-back this season as well. You know, he's come through and Ward-Prowse. And they've got others who are in the fringe, like, you know, your Reeds and Gallagher's, who are young players they're willing to give a chance to. And I want everyone to do that. I really do. I think it's massive. Because if you've got a young local hero, the fans will give him extra buzz. Look at the way they've taken to Rashford. Proof in point there. Mm. They want him to be... If City had two young players who were English from their academy, the fans would take to him. Every club's fans would.
Well, you talk to people at City and they're talking about, well, we've got this group between sort of about 12 and 16 who will fulfil that criteria. They're not quite there yet. When you look at City now... Okay, strategically they've got it right. You know, that mm-hmm. academy, the training complex,
it's
is
fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the club itself, or that first team itself, tells me that the culture's still not right at the highest level. They're indolent.
It feels like an end of an era, doesn't it, for that team? And probably the right time for that to happen. To be honest, I think that I think Pellegrini deserves a lot of criticism for the way things have meandered this season after the start they had with the five successive wins when we all thought they were going to walk the league. They're pinning all their hopes on a fantastic run in the Champions League. And I mean, they're going to have to get into the semi-finals and the final really to make this season feel fulfilled, because that team should be... That should have been their...
They've got the best squad in the league. They should have walked the league this year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And okay.
And they're in danger of not even coming top four.
Well, that's you're talking reputation there. The reality is that too many of them are basically... They're playing at 60%, 70%, 80% max.
I think some of them just got old together. I mean, Zabaleta appears to have lost his powers there on the wane. In fact, both sides of fullbacks are not terribly impressive. Centre-halves, when company's not there, there is no leadership.
Di Michaelis, my
He was a shambles yesterday, wasn't he?
But why is a club of Manchester City's standing and status so reliant upon Aguero at one end and Kompany at the other?
And it's frightening, isn't it?
It is terrifying. And you can throw in
Silva's gone off this season. Maybe the injuries have taken their toll. Mm. They've horribly missed De Bruyne, no question about that, because when you had him and Sterling either side, you were stretching teams with your pace. And with Navas, while he's incredibly quick, there's not enough M for that, is there? You wouldn't be scared of him. You'd be worried about him in a foot race, but you wouldn't have worried about him when he got to the end of it and with the ball at his feet. Doesn't do enough.
Should City be scared of actually not making the top four?
Well, they should be concerned, yeah. I mean, I spoke to Wenger on Friday last week, and he was admitting that he was looking over his shoulder at what West Ham were doing. And now it's West Ham and Manchester United right on City's shoulder, right there. West Ham's momentum and the emotional attachment of what of leaving the bowling ground will drive them forward through the final weeks of the season. And they will be a proper threat as long as they keep their key attacking players fit, the Paez and the Lanzinis fit. Manchester United just never go away. I mean, this has not been a good season, and yet every time we think they're out of it, they pull out a result. They win at Liverpool, they win at Manchester City. And so, you know, it should be a concern for City, and they have the distraction of two, you know, gargantuan ties against Paris Saint-Germain to come, which will draw their focus.
And also the injuries now, they're mounting up. You've lost Hart, presumably for...
No, they're talking three or four weeks, aren't they?
So potentially both legs of the quarter-final. Sterling, likewise, is going to be out.
Kompany.
They are running short, and I've no sympathy at all, because that's why we have a squad, and also that's why you're supposed to have a youth team to fill the gaps when you get injuries. If they're not good enough, somebody else's fault. It's the manager's fault. It's the recruitment's fault. It's Begiristan's fault. It's Soriano's fault. It's everyone's fault. Stop moaning. Get on with it. Do something about it. Show a bit of gumption, actually, because that was the problem. They lack the intensity that's required. Almost as if they thought, well, we've won the league twice. We don't need to worry about that. We've got a new manager coming. He either fancies us, great, or he doesn't fancy us, and we'll go off and get a massive pay rise, go somewhere else and cut off a transfer fee, so it doesn't matter. But we haven't won the Champions League, so let's try and win that, shall we, boys? Because it doesn't matter.
One thing you can't accuse Slaven Bilic of is a lack of intensity. Any other season, he'd be potential manager of the season,
yeah,
wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll admit I was wrong. I thought that it was a risky appointment last summer. I thought it was a manager who wore his heart on his sleeve a bit too much, and maybe the tactical acumen would escape in the Premier League. But I was horribly wrong. Horribly wrong. He's been brilliant. I presume he had a major say in the arrival of Paye, who has just been a breath of fresh air and has driven that team on as an attacking force. And they're great. And it's lovely to see, in fairness, because there is a big moment when they leave Upton Park, and for them to be doing that on that.
But we're talking about state-sponsored football here, aren't we? Should they have that stadium?
No, they shouldn't have it, but they have got it.
The taxpayer will make West Ham a top-six club for the next 10 years.
Somebody had to go in there. They couldn't leave it empty. So if they had to find an anchor tenant. Now, you might argue, why did West Ham get it? Should Spurs have got it? Should somebody else have got it? Somebody had to go in there just to make it better. And I know people say, well, what about this and what about that, about the Athletic's legacy? It was unviable without an anchor tenant or a club playing there. And West Ham won the lottery. They really did. They've got lucky, as did Manchester City 10 years ago.
Yeah,
sometimes you just got to be in the right place at the right time. Manchester United found a team at the birth of the Premier League, the right place at the right time. It just happens. You get opportunity. What you've got to do is then grasp that opportunity.
Yeah, and they haven't done that yet, have they? I mean, no. There will be a period of adjustment next year, which will be difficult for them, I imagine. The atmosphere will be very different in that stadium.
What's interesting this year is that the criticism that's been made of Bilic as a manager over his career has never been about his intelligence and his tactical nuance. It's about the lack of goals in his team. They don't score enough goals. He's obviously done something about it because this team does score enough goals. Maybe that's because of the fundamental weakness in the Premier League, but maybe it's because he's learnt and revised his own thoughts and feelings and approach to the game in his period, particularly in Turkey.
Martin talked about winning the lottery. Now, the opposite of that must be supporting one of the North East clubs, Sunderland and Newcastle. Yeah. That result, the 1-1 on Sunday, probably the worst thing that could happen to both clubs, wasn't it?
A result that was cheered in Norwich and possibly South London as well. I mean, Yeah.
By the way, do you still think that Palace are in trouble?
Yeah. Absolutely. They haven't won 13 games. They haven't won since December the 19th. The same issues that affected them at the start of the season, the lack of goals, lack of a natural goal scorer in the side is still a
problem. They need two wins, don't they?
Yeah, they haven't had any since mid-December.
I mean, 39 will probably be enough. But they've been on.
Been saying that since mid-December.
They've been stuck on 33 for a very long time.
Mm. It's a tricky situation, and it's a real test of Pardew. I think the return of Punchin will be a bonus. The return of MacArthur for the semi-final will be a bonus. But I do worry even about the FA Cup now, distraction-wise.
But looking at the North East, Sunderland, no clean sheets in 16 games. Not a Sam Allardyce team. Rafa, you could see little signs that he was getting a bit of defensive discipline in there. But who's going to score their goals? Are we going to have a championship next season with Newcastle and Sunderland in it?
I think so, yes, at the moment. I think the key will be the next three games. Norwich play in order. Sunderland, Palace, Newcastle, I think. Newcastle, Palace, Sunderland. Yeah. If they get 7 points out of that, then it's gone for the two North East teams, you feel. Norwich will then be right in 35 points. They'll be above Palace, potentially.
Only if Palace don't get winning. Because I still think there's a chance that... I think they will look at it. Newcastle and Sunderland will look at it and think, well, we can still catch Palace. We can still get... Yeah. If their form continues... I mean, they are pinning their hopes on effectively Palace going 21 games, I think, pretty much, without a win.
But I still think Palace will just about get out of it. I think they need to win one game and it will change their mentality.
Yeah, that's true.
It will free them. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how they do it. But the other two, the Newcastle and Sunderland, you look at them and you can't find any real reason to believe they'll get out of it. They're not good enough. They are very... The only thing you've got in Sunderland's cause is Defoe because he's a goal scorer. Yeah. That's the one thing. But he's not in the first flush of youth. He's going to be tired. He's playing every game and he's not getting any rest. And he went to Canada for an easy life, remember?
Yeah. But at least we've got the international break, which is gives him that rest. Let's have a little look at that. England, Germany on Saturday night, then Holland at Wembley. What about the mood of the nation? Are we ready to embrace this England team?
I think we are if Roy Hodgson gives us reason to and picks the younger players in the team and doesn't revert to type. I think the current squad is relatively exciting, actually. I mean, there's a lovely core of Spurs players who are, as I say, riding the crest of the wave at the moment. They're all energised and should remain the core of this England team for a long time to come. There's also a bit of intrigue in the likes of Drinkwater and Vardy, who are bringing all the optimism from Leicester City in there. And that will offer a bit of enthusiasm and a bit of zest and something to look forward to if Roy plays those players in the right positions and the team as a unit is young and refreshed and goes and learns from what will be an education in Berlin on Saturday. My only concern about England is that come Russia and Marseille in June is that England go back to the sort of tried and tested, but the same players who have let us down in the past.
Yeah, but need some adventure, don't we?
Well, yeah, but hang on. Revert to type. Tried and tested. This is a bloke who started the World Cup with Welbeck, Sturridge,
true,
and Sterling, who started the Euros, his first major game, with Oxlade-Chamberlain in the team. Mm-hmm. He gave Dele Alli his first England cap after 10 games for Spurs. He played Harry Kane after he scored 6 goals. If you actually look at what Hodgson has done, he hasn't been tried and trusted and stick to the old guard. He's completely altered the team in the period. Now, you may say he doesn't always pick the right player. This was a bloke who picked Jamie Vardy a year ago. Everyone's like, Jamie who? Are you kidding? You must be mad. This shows this manager hasn't got a clue. Maybe he's got a bit of a clue. Maybe he saw something that other people hadn't. You know what? He did see something that other people hadn't. So I suspect he wants to be bold. I mean, the players he's picking. I'd love him to go with Ali and Barkley in the starting team on Saturday just to see whether they could cut it.
Yeah. It's a free go at it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, we've got no Rooney there, so you have to play a different way. Let's play 4-3-2-1. Let's go with, for me, or a 4-2-3-1. But Dyer and Drinkwater.
Is Rooney, though, a potential tipping point? Will he come in no matter what happens in the summer?
I think he will.
I think he will if he's fit. Yeah. He's got to be fit. He's said to him, it's interesting, I think that this is the first time that an England captain is in danger of not being selected for a long time. The last one who did this was Venables in 96 when he didn't pick Platt in the Euros. He was his captain all the way to the eve of the tournament. He was captain and he was dumped for the first game and he went with Adams as captain against Switzerland. And if Rooney's not fit, I think he's going to have to leave him out because he's not fit. I don't care who it is. If they're not fit, they can't go. And there will be... But if he is fit, he must go because he's still our best player. If you look at his performances for England over the last 4 years, he's been our number one player. He's our top goal scorer. He has scored Shedler. He scores a goal every 1.5 games for Hodgson. It's not as if his performances have been awful. They've actually been pretty good. The other, before he got injured, he was United's best player for a month, scoring every game.
OK, Martin, final question for both of you. And it's our solemn duty to pile pressure on England, isn't it, as journalists? How will they get on in the Euros?
I think Hodgson will take them to the quarterfinals and will offer enough evidence of long-term thinking to get a new contract.
Martin?
As ever, England will go out to the first decent team they play in the quarterfinals on penalties and the manager will be asked to take another alternative employment.
Well, we have been here before. I agree, quarterfinal. Thanks for joining us here on Life's a Pitch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.